Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are going to have part two of our interview with Francis Benfato. Last week, we talked to Francis about how he got started in bodybuilding and how he got his pro card competing in the Mr. Universe and talked about his first couple pro shows. So today, we are going to talk about Francis's career when he competed in the Mr. Olympia, which he did several times, especially in 1990 when they had the drug testing and Francis looked really, really great. And he made the top six that year, and he feels he should have been placed higher. And then we're going to talk to Francis about his comeback, which he made several years later. He was much, much bigger, but he tore his pec, which was a really unfortunate accident, especially for an aesthetic bodybuilder like Francis, who relied on his shape and symmetry to do so well. But very interesting interview we got coming up with Francis Benfato. I hope you guys enjoyed part one last week. All right, before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn body fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. Their wide range of services will ensure that you not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, which is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they will give you 20% off your order. And I guess they are really busy. I talked to the owner, Jeff, and Jeff said with this coronavirus going around, a lot of people are looking for ways to enhance their immune system. So give them a call and see if they can help you out. They've definitely helped me out. All right. When we get done with our interview with Francis Benfato, I'm going to read an article from the February 1986 issue of Muscle and Fitness magazine, which is the 1985 Mr. Olympia report. 35 years ago already, we had the Mr. Olympia in 1985. And I can remember I went and saw this contest on closed circuit television. It was at a movie theater. And that's what we did back in 1985. It was really, really cool. Lee Haney, of course, won his second Mr. Olympia. And I was looking at this old Muscle and Fitness magazine. They had a really impressive photo report. Bill Reynolds wrote it, so it's really good. So I'm going to read that right after we have our interview with Francis Benfato. All right, and we do have some emails, so I wanted to read those. Thank you guys for sending me emails. If you have any comments on the show at all, you can send them to naturalolympia@gmail.com. That is my personal email address, and I will read your email on the air. All right, this was from Mark Johnson. Mark said, "Hi, John. Unending thanks for your commitment to keeping the content going over these past few months, and I must say the episodes have been outstanding. The Albert Beckles interview was a personal favorite of mine since he has always been a testament of determination over age. The other gem that I hope new listeners to your show don't overlook is your interview with Dal Ruplinger. Wow, what an inspiring story with such invaluable insights throughout. I've gone back to this one several times, and I learned something new with every listen. Have you thought about contacting 1975 AAU Mr. USA Clinton Barile for an interview? He had one of the most well-developed and conditioned physiques during the mid-70s, and he should be easy to track down. I would love to hear about his training and diet philosophy, his time at Bill Pearl's gym, as well as his participation in the 1977 AAU Mr. America. Perhaps the best thing about this coronavirus mess has been the reemergence of the legend and my favorite bodybuilder of all time, Muhammad McAway. I had been following his almost inactive YouTube channel and Instagram page, always hoping for that rare post, and I was overjoyed to see three new videos this past week, the best one being the most recent where he talks about his early weightlifting training in Egypt. We can only hope that his enthusiasm to share more about his life continues at least long enough for you to do a three-part interview with him. Go get it. Finally, let us all continue to keep Chris Dickerson in our prayers and meditations. John, it's been an honor to help support your show. You are a class act all the way. Thanks again, Mark Johnson. All right, Mark, thank you very much for that nice email. Talking about Muhammad McAway, yeah, I did go to his Instagram page, and he has been posting a lot on there. I think it's called Official Muhammad McAway, so if you guys want to check that out. I sent Muhammad a message, and I asked him to be on the show, but he did not respond. So if you guys want to go on there, and maybe you could bug him too, send him a personal message and tell him about the Bodybuilding Legends podcast and tell him how we'd love to hear his interview. He'd be a great interview. Muhammad, of course, is a real legend in the sport, especially when it comes to his posing ability. It will always be remembered for that. So let's try to contact Muhammad out there and see if he'll come on the show. That would be great. Also, good suggestion about Clinton Barile, too. I'm definitely trying to contact him. Actually, I did try to contact him the other day, but I wasn't friends with him on Facebook. So I reached out to Doug Brignoli, who is friends with him, and he said he would try to contact him for me. So keep your fingers crossed on that one. Got another email here from Rex. Rex says, "Hiya, John. I'm patiently waiting for your next podcast interviews. What's in the works, if I may ask? Waiting for my spin lock dumbbells and incline bench to come in. I'm climbing the walls. Stay safe, Rex." Well, Rex, I'm still working on interviews. Rick Wayne is another guy we got trying to get on the show. He said he was interested, so we just got to get him on the show. Robert Nalon, who was also a really good photographer from Australia, he shot a lot with Arnold, and they hung out with Arnold in the 70s. He was interested also in doing it. So I'll just keep trying to hit these guys. Hopefully we can get somebody for next week. What else we got going on? The fitness challenge that I started, I don't know if you guys remember, I started on my website, johnhansonfitness.com. I started a fitness challenge back in January, and it was a 12-week fitness challenge, and they hired me as their coach, everybody who joined the challenge, and I stayed with them all 12 weeks, and it just ended on April 13th, this week. So we are going to give out prizes. We got the top three winners, whoever shows the most progress from their before and after picture, and also the most progress with their measurements. And they also wrote a little paper, each one of them, telling me about their backstory and what they had to go through to get in shape for this fitness challenge. So, of course, this last month has been very, very challenging because of the coronavirus. All the gyms closed down. Even the food was hard to get. So it's been really tough. So a couple of people did stick with it, though. So we're going to have our top three. And I'm sorry that everybody had to go through those hard times the last month, but congratulations to these guys who did stick with it and were able to make some fantastic progress. I'm going to share these pictures on my johnhansonfitness.com website and also put them on my Facebook page. And I'm also going to do a video interview with the winner of the John Hansen Fitness Challenge, and I'm going to put that up on YouTube, so I'll let you know when that's up. So we will hopefully do this again in the near future as soon as things go back to normal and this coronavirus thing ends. All right, that's all I got. I'm hoping you guys are getting through this challenge with this coronavirus. I hope everybody's staying safe out there. I know there's certain parts of the country that are really bad. So everybody just stay inside and do what the medical authorities are telling us to do. And hopefully this thing will be over soon. That's what everybody's hoping for. I know everybody's dying to get back to the gym. I know I am. So anyways, that is it for our opening. And here is our interview with Francis Benfato, part two of our interview with Francis, where we talk about his pro career. Here we go.
Grand Prix show that year, too, right after the Mr. Olympia?
So that was 1988 Night of Champions. And then after I did 88, I did another competition in Paris in a Grand Prix, 1988. And then I got into, yes, the Grand Prix in 1989.
Okay.
A series of Grand Prix, European Tour.
Right.
Among different countries and cities.
Yeah.
One Grand Prix in Spain, one Grand Prix in Italy, one in Sweden, one in Germany, and so forth, in 2 weeks period, something like that.
Okay. So you did your first Olympia then, was it the next year, in 1989, when it was
absolutely
in Italy?
Absolutely. I got qualified at the last legs of the European Tour in Cologne, in Germany.
Okay.
And I was fourth. Third, Mohamed Benaziza. Second was Mike Christian, and first Gary Strigon. First Mike Christian, and second Gary Strigon.
Okay.
And I got fourth place, and I was qualified top five. I was qualified to do Mr. Olympia, and I did my first Mr. Olympia in 1989 in Rimini, Italy.
Yeah. Tell me about that. How was that? How was that experience?
A great experience, again, because we are talking about the Olympian coming to their show for several years in a row. And you can see the difference, the way they display their physique on yeah. stage, the way they are backstage and all, you can see the difference.
Yeah.
And now you understand the difference in between amateur, Grand Prix, and Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, yeah.
And Kenny was there, of course. Vince Taylor was there. Lila Braga, Mohamed Benaziza again, Rich Kaspari, and Samir Banu, Bertil Fox, Andreas Manzer, a very ripped bodybuilder also from yeah. Germany. Yeah, the level was mind-blowing away. Mike Quinn, oh yeah, it was incredible, Mr. Olympia, and my first Olympia, and I got 12th place. I was happy with my placing, but again here, I missed the peak. If I was as good as I were during my European tour, especially at the end, at the German Grand Prix, honestly, I believe I could have been top six.
Okay.
So you see the distinction when yeah. you're conditioned
right.
in great condition shape and when you're not.
Yeah.
So you're not 12, you're in great condition shape, you're at your best, you can be top six.
Yeah. So even though it was Mr. Olympia, you still could have been in the top six if you would yes. have been in the top condition, yeah.
Yeah, top condition, yes. Yeah. But, again, I missed the my peak.
Yeah. I remember that contest.
Very difficult.
Yeah. I remember that contest. They started with everybody had the flags on stage, right? You had your for your country.
Absolutely correct. Yeah. Yes, that was great. It was original, and I really liked it because you came with your flag, and it was good. It was well organized. A lot of crowd also and support backstage, on stage, and no, it was great, great competition. Mr. Olympia, my first Mr. Olympia.
Yeah,
really.
I want to talk about the posing, Francis, because you were always a good poser. And if you look back at, like, that contest, you had Lee Haney was a great poser. Rich Kaspari was a great poser. Mike Christian. Of course, Vince Taylor was a really good poser. Lee Labrada was an amazing poser. So where did you learn how to do your posing? Because you were always a really good poser from the first time I saw you in the Mr. Universe. You're always really good.
You know, at that time when I wanted to learn, we had these video cassettes, you know.
Yeah.
And from Mr. Olympia. And I learned from such a great poser like Mohamed Benaziza, Samir Banout, you know, Berry Demey, Lila Braga, who was already doing Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
And Rich Kaspari. But you see, there is different way of posing. For example, Rich Kaspari was quite aggressive. He was
yeah.
he was out on stage. He liked to create very strong contraction in order to show more fibers and more veins and vascularity and all.
Right.
And it was his temper. He's, you know. Lila Braga was more classic. He was more in control with each pose.
Right.
I liked very much Samir Banout. Yeah. Samir Banout was a great poser in early 1980, and especially when he won Mr. Olympia in 1983 in Munich,
yeah.
he was really, really great. And Mohamed Makaoui.
Yeah,
so, yes, Frank Zane, when he did Mr. Olympia, and the choice of the music inspired also you, because I was also finding music in order to inspire me to present my best on stage and my physical attribute to a point where we almost see no weak point.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a work on its own. You have to choose carefully, select carefully some pose in order to see the best of your physique and,
yeah.
and nothing else. And the way you position some body parts when you do a specific pose,
yeah,
make a difference. You can improve your weak point the way you position your legs or you position your hamstring or you position all the whole body, and you can create an illusion with specific angle of posing with specific contraction, and the transitional pose also was something very important for me. But I got inspired by the people who did previously, before me, and I saw pictures, I detailed pictures, I see a magazine, I see these pictures, and I see from the hands to the toe,
right,
to the head, I see everything in order to make sure that nothing is missing. And I understood this art of posing when I saw great posing.
Yeah. Do you think it made a difference back then, Francis, to be a good poser? Do you think the judges rewarded that?
I would say yes. Today again, they don't have to be that good. They don't have to be that good because their main concern is to look their best on the compulsory pose.
Right.
And when they look their best on the compulsory pose, judgment is almost done.
Yeah, they that's how they judge it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And then after the free posing, it can make a distinction to a certain extent, but honestly, not that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's more for your name, for your image, and for the crowd, and even the church. They can enjoy, everybody can enjoy a great poser, obviously.
Yeah.
But yes, then you have to work on your posing, because otherwise, if you look alike, you cannot make a good place. You have to look better, or you have to do everything under your power to appear bigger, harder, more defined than what you are in reality and what the other are next to you.
Yeah, right.
Even if they are bigger, I beat bodybuilders that were like outweighed me 30, 40 kilo, which means like you almost double in pounds.
Yeah, right.
Because of the way I was displaying my physique. So, yes, you have to really bring this into play in order to make a distinction and to gain some places and to be noticed.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember, it's overall category. I was competing at Mr. Olympia. I was a middleweight. Most of the time, I was around 75, 76 kg, which is like 165 pounds.
Wow, that's amazing.
In the most of the time, 160, 165 max.
Wow, unbelievable.
And so you have to do something.
Yeah, to stand up.
Not to mention that I was the one who was warming up a lot backstage.
Uh-huh.
Because I had to create this illusion backstage. So when I step on stage, especially the first shot the judge gets from us coming on stage, you have to be impressive. The shoulder was big, the chest was big, the abdominal was well warmed up, so it showed up. My thighs was hard and defined and all, and I had to show all that straight on.
Yeah.
So I was warming up sometime 1 hour and 30 minutes before I step on stage. While some Olympian, they just warm up a little bit, not much.
Mm-hmm.
Because they was concerned about definition and fatigue and all. Me, I was pumping, because I wanted to look the part.
Right. And I like what you said, how when you looked at a picture, you would look at everything from the hand all the way through the body, you know, to see how everything was positioned in order to get the pose just right.
Very important. But you see that even if there is no explanation, suggestion, recommendation in the magazine, but when you see some great poser posing, when you see pictures of Frank Zane, even Mike Manzer was a great poser.
We must
not underestimate. He was a great poser.
Yeah.
He was very particular. When he posed, everything was almost perfect.
Right, right.
Very, very great poser. But you see that. So you just have to get inspired. You see that, you say, okay, in order to get to this point and to do this pose and to be as impressive as they are with my own physique and size and all, you have to present the body the way they present the body.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to spend sometimes 20 minutes, half an hour on one pose in order to adjust this pose, to modify, to correct this specific pose to look better and better and better and better.
Hmm.
Like I did set of the same pose, for example. I take the pose, I correct the pose, I modify the pose, I'm pleased, okay, but now I'm fatigued, so rest. And I come back again. It's like a set of the same pose and doing the same pose over and over again for as long as I was fatigued, and after rest a little bit and come back again, double biceps.
Yeah.
And I did with each and all pose.
Wow. It's So it's like working, it's like working out, like doing sets.
Yes, but you have to, you must when you don't have when you don't have the attribute the other has, such as body weight, size, density.
Yeah.
You have to do something special,
right.
Different.
Right. Right.
And not to mention that now, if you have the competition who are bigger, harder, bigger, harder, and as defined as you are,
yeah.
and they are great poser, what you do now?
Right, right. And you had it even tougher back then, because like you said, you guys were all in one category, where today, now they have classic physique, they have men's physique, if you want to do that, then they have the open. So you could choose whatever division you wanted to go in, but you had everything, all the body was in once.
Hey, don't forget also, we have to mention, there was also defined, there was ripped. I wasn't the only one, no?
Yeah.
Every bodybuilder, pro bodybuilder was conditioned.
Right, right.
I wasn't the only one, no?
Yeah, right.
Today, you can get away. Today, if I had to compete again, to be honest, if I play the same game that they play, and I can shred, ripped, I am top.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of definition, because they are not defined. When I saw the Arnold Classic, with all the respect I have for the champion,
right?
For me, I see the first boy. He's great. He's good. He has a lot of size and all. I see Dexter Jackson. I see I see them. I say, okay, well, for me, this is an exhibition show.
Hmm. Yeah.
That was an exhibition show.
Right. Right. Hmm.
And I'm sure it was an exhibition show for bodybuilder of the 90s.
Yes, yeah, right, right.
I saw them coming to France and doing exhibition with me, from Tom Platz to Nina Brada to Bob Paris to Lee Haney and all. They all came in great condition shape for exhibitions.
For exhibition.
Most of the time.
Right.
Most of the time.
Yes. Why do you think that is, Francis? Do you think it's just they're doing different drugs now or different contest prep?
It's a criterion. It's a criteria. If you give me Mr. Olympia title with an exhibition shape, I prefer.
Yeah.
Not to mention they are big as well.
Yeah, very big.
So they can get away.
Right.
So I don't want to disrespect anyone, to disrespect anyone. But definitely they are not defined. They are not as defined because of the criterion. Now, if you have a bodybuilder, and there is no other choice, even if someone is a little more defined, he's not that much defined.
Yeah.
So we cannot put someone who is in, let's say, 6th or 7th or 8th place at Mr. Olympia with shred Mr. Olympia, because he only has definition. There is nothing else.
Yeah.
So, no, the winner deserves to win, and the placing is fair, no problem with that. But no, they don't have. It's not the same physique. Not to mention the posing. I watch Arnold Classic lately. I wasn't excited.
Yeah.
And I'm passionate, but it's okay. You know. I think I had the best time. I had the luck to have my career during the best time.
Yeah.
Where we saw great physique that we don't see nowadays.
Right, right.
And I'm saying with a big smile in my face,
right,
because I believe in that 100%.
Yeah. Right, right. I agree. So let's go to 1990, Francis. You go to the Night of the Champions first, right, before you did the Mr. Olympia?
Yes, I did the Night of Champions second time. I got one place up. So I was 8.
Okay.
And then after I did, I did Mr. Olympia, thereafter.
Mm-hmm. And you did really well there. You got top 6.
I got top 6.
Yeah.
Then I was disappointed, to be honest. I was disappointed because I was the most conditioned on stage.
Yeah.
Body blur. And I didn't have only this element as physical attributes. I was still proportionate and I had a nice muscle.
Yeah.
Shape. So that's also for me important, because nice muscle doesn't come only with genetics, they come with extreme definition.
Mm.
Like the face, if you're pushy, you're not that good looking.
Right.
Now, if you have a model face, you look better.
Right.
And it's exactly the same. A muscle, a well defined muscle, look prettier, better. more appealing to the eyes.
Yeah.
And I paid the price to be conditioned and to have a beautiful muscle, I will say, at that time because of the definition and original shape also. And I was disappointed because backstage, I like to see the competition, and I was more conditioned than Lee Haney, Mr. Olympia. Honestly, for me, if we go in front of the mirror, Lee Haney and I was looking better than him. So I should have been in front of him.
In front of Lee Haney, yeah.
Of course I was shorter. Of course I was lighter. So if you see body weight, you say, he's bigger. Yeah, he's bigger. But who is the most impressive? I don't care if you're bigger.
Yeah.
There is bodybuilder who are much bigger. So it's not about being big or having size. It's about, yes, having a certain size, be big, yes, but with quality, muscle quality, definition. And he couldn't manage at that time to be that defined. So I was disappointed because I knew I was better than Mr. Olympia. And I say again with a smile in my face,
right,
because I saw that.
Right.
I saw that, like I see you now.
Right.
And so I was disappointed.
What about Lee Labrada? Because he was second. And
I was also better than him.
Better than him, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, and it was the first time in my career I was better than Bossy, Lee Haney, because I competed with them in 1989.
Yeah.
And at that time, no, it wasn't the case. But in 1990, definitely I was better than Lee Haney, Lee Labrada. I think I had also better physique than Mike Christian because he lacked legs and calves.
Yeah.
And I believe he was good. He had good conditioning, Mike Christian.
Yeah, he looked good that year.
But I think, I will have put top three, Mike Christian, Frankie Brands, and myself.
Who was the other one?
Frankie Brands. He was Mr. Universe.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, he was in great shape. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the top three.
Uh-huh.
But the top three at Mr. Olympia. That was my class name.
Okay.
But it's over now.
Yeah, right. How about Sean Ray? How'd you think he looked?
Oh, smooth.
He was smooth, okay. Yeah.
He was not in shape.
Yeah, because he got third, I think, right?
Are you in coach?
Yeah.
Or fourth?
I think it was Haney, Labrada, Sean Ray.
No, Mike Christian got third, no?
I think Christian was fourth. He was really disappointed.
Yeah. And fifth, Richard Sparry.
Richard Sparry, and then you were sixth, yeah.
And I was sixth, yeah. Yeah, Sean Ray was not
not far at his best.
At his, no. Mm-hmm. He was not at his best, yeah.
Okay.
But he was good, huh?
Yeah. And that was the year they drug tested, too, so I'm sure a lot of those guys didn't know how to manage that like you did, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely right, yeah. That's right.
And you had experience with that before, too, with the World Championships.
Yeah, but to a certain extent, I was not as in shape as at Mr. Olympia. At Mr. Olympia, I was really, really in great condition shape.
Yeah.
No, I think the American didn't have the experience to pass the drug test, definitely, because they stopped doing Mr. Universe since 1986.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have experience. And you know, when you're a professional bodybuilder and you compete at a professional level, you don't have drug tests. So the first time you have a drug test, now you have an handicap. Huh?
Right.
Now it's they was in trouble.
Right, right. So what shows did you do in 1991? Did you do you did the Arnold Classic in 1991?
Yes, I did the Arnold Classic in 1991, but I was never as inspired and motivated to prepare for the Arnold Classic than I was for Mr. Olympia.
Okay.
For me it was one or the other.
Yeah.
And Arnold Classic was good, but it was Arnold Classic, which means that it was a competition. I didn't have the same interest, the same passion to prepare, the same motivation. And at that time, if you were motivated, concerned by the prize money, it was great because not only they had a very good prize money, but they had the Rolex, they had the hammer, they had a lot of... So, you know, they compensate with something else, and it was higher in price than the Mr. Olympia, actually. They just did differently.
Right.
So, no, it wasn't that appealed me. And the stage was magnificent. Honestly, it was Olympia stage, as good, if not better.
Right.
The organization was great. And the athlete was treated like, you know, like star.
Yeah.
So no, all was good, but me, I didn't have the same passion, motivation to prepare and to get in great shape for the Arnold Classic. Never. Mm-hmm. But always for Mr. Olympia, especially the 1990 and 91.
Yeah.
These two competitions, I really prepared very hard, very intense, and I did all I could to get in great condition shape, and I get in 2 times in a row in great condition shape.
Yeah.
So in 91, I placed 7 at Mr. Olympia, and I was already under contract with Joe Wheeler. I was part of the Wheeler team of athletes.
Okay.
I was preparing at Gold Gym, so I had the luxury to train with all the gym equipment brands at Gold Gym.
Oh, you
I was living close by.
Okay. Did you, you didn't live in America then, right? Were you just visiting, Francis?
No. I was living permanently in America for years.
Oh, you were? You know? Okay.
Yeah, because I was part of the Wheeler team of athletes.
Oh, okay.
So I was going quite often to the Wheeler office at Woodland Hills.
Yeah.
And visiting Joe most of the time without appointments as well.
Mm-hmm. How did you like that? How did you like living in America?
Very much so. Because you see, when you're a bodybuilder, to train at Gold Gym and to live the bodybuilding lifestyle is what you need to do in order to be at your best, not to mention the publicity. Because when you are living in France or any country in Europe, you don't have as much publicity as the American has. For example, Lila Brada did, I don't know, maybe 50 covers of magazine.
Right.
Muscle Fitness, Flex Magazine, Muscle Mag, blah, blah, blah. Because he was living in America.
Right.
So, and he knew the importance of the publicity, and he was doing a lot of competition too. And so publicity helped him also, beside his great physique and all he has done as a competitor, as
right.
a professional competitor, amateur and professional competitor. It's helpful. So I decided to completely pack and move to America in 91 in order to honor my contract, but also to be there to do pictures and to do what I had to do to make a name and image. And I did good because I think I got recognition when I was living in America very much so. And I did a lot of pictures, cover, and so I was quite happy.
Okay.
Very, very happy to live.
So how did you feel about the 91 Olympia? I thought you looked really, really good in that show too.
Yes, I was looking good, but again, the competition was so much better. We didn't have the drug test anymore.
Yeah, it was way better than 91.
Yes, the competition was way above 1990. Lee came back as good or better than never before.
Right.
Which has good, or yeah, maybe better.
Yeah.
Dorian Yates came. Sonny Smith, a great bodybuilder also. Sonny Smith from Australia came.
Yeah.
He wasn't there. I think Sean Ray was in great shape.
Yeah.
Lina Pada came back again in great shape. Rich Caspary was there, but Rich was already not as good as he were when. But remember, I did a lot of competition, especially Olympia.
Yeah.
He started 84, 85, 86, 87, 88. So when he reached 90 and 91, the physique wasn't as good as he were before.
Right.
But he was there. No, the competition was incredible.
Yeah.
Akim Albrecht was there also.
Yeah. Vince Taylor. Vince Taylor did good that year.
Vince Taylor was there, so
the
level was mind-blowing. So I think my performance was better in 91 than 1990 in terms of the competition.
Yeah.
Because I put the top 7, and the competition was way above 1990. So way better.
Yeah.
So that's why I think 91 was a great performance.
Right. Really. Sean Ray always had a lot of respect for you. He had a lot of respect for your physique, right?
We like each other since day one.
Uh-huh.
We still like each other today.
Mm-hmm.
Because Sean Ray was, he's a fat guy, and that's why I like him.
Yeah.
He says things as they are, and he compliments my physique in 1990. I remember the video where he was speaking about it. And it's difficult when you're off shape, like he was. He was not in his best, obviously. To stay positive and to say the truth, because Liene didn't come to me and say, hey man, you have great conditions here. He didn't say that.
Yeah.
Lila Prada also, he didn't mention.
Yeah.
And other bodybuilder too. And Sean Vegas.
Yeah.
So that's why I like him, because he had the guts to come all shape to tell me, I'm in shape.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Sean, being an aesthetic bodybuilder himself, I think he admires other bodybuilders who have that aesthetic shape also.
Yes, no, absolutely, absolutely. No, and Sean was great thereafter. I mean, in 91, 92, he was at his best, and then after, he didn't stop to be always in top condition shape.
Top condition every year.
And missing the title from that match.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And lucky to be with such a mind-blowing away bodybuilder, Dorian Yates, then also Ronnie Coleman, and he went into era that was competition too. So he did great. He did really good.
So then you stuck around for a couple more years then, Francis, right? You were competing in the IFBB, like the Arnold Classic and the Olympia, but your placings went down after 91.
Yes, you see what's happened after 91. I knew that I will not be able to do better than what I did, which was good already. I think I was burned out.
Yeah.
And all I needed there is to have a support system that was stronger than that. Remember, you move from your country, France.
Yeah.
You go to America. And you're on your own. I was with my girlfriend then, that is my wife today.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. And you don't have a coach, really. My coach helped me, came to America only 1 month, just clear Mr. Olympia. The rest of the time it was phone call, and so it wasn't really. You know, I realized that you need to have friends, you need to have training partners, you need to have coach close to you.
Yeah.
Some need more than other. And I was the type of bodybuilder, I needed a coach more than other, for obvious reason, perhaps, be French, be in America, and having this pressure of competing at Olympia, at the best competition.
Yeah.
I needed that. And I think if I had what I needed, I could have done so much better. So I was burnt out. I didn't really believe I could win Mr. Olympia, which I did in 1990. Because I remember backstage when Joe Wheeler took the two official medals of Mr. Olympia and he put around my neck.
Oh, really?
The Sandow statue.
Uh-huh.
And he said, next year it's for you. Which means, indirectly, don't be disappointed. You can still compete and do great next year. Bon, the problem was the drug test. If we had kept the drug test, and if I could have the possibility to improve, and I'm sure I would have improved my physique from 1990. For me, the drug test was a possibility to go to the top. And to make the top three, or why not winning Mr. Olympia. But without the drug test, it was impossible. And it was really impossible after, because the level was too high. It was overall competition. You cannot compete with these guys. First of all, who don't have the same preparation than you. So I was more like an Olympian who could handle the drug test and become a Mr. Olympia only with the drug test. But without the drug test, no. So I knew that, and I stopped competing.
Yeah. You think if they would have kept with that drug testing, how do you think that would have changed the sport of bodybuilding?
I would say each and all Olympian will have learned how to be in great condition shape in spite of the drug test in predetermined time.
Yeah.
So yes, I mean, what I did, everyone could have done.
Yeah.
But you have to revisit.
Give it time.
Realize your Mr. Olympia preparation.
Yeah.
And in order to do so, you have to learn. It's not in one time that you can learn how to best pick a predetermined time. It's impossible in one time. Right. You need some time to get into this level of competition.
Yeah. I just wonder how it would have changed the look of bodybuilding. Because after that, that's when the guys really got big. Because then Dorian Yates came in after Lee Haney quit. And then, Ronnie Coleman, and now they're so big. I wonder if it would have changed the whole look of the sport if they would have kept with the drug testing.
Yes, definitely. If they had maintained, we will have see different physique, different attributes, with more definition, and the criteria would have been different. And we could have changed the sport, but you needed at that time to have authorities that take the right responsibilities and they emphasize quality over quantity, and definition over size, and posing.
Posing, right. Mm-hmm.
So we will be different, you know. We will have, because when you see Arnold Classic on this time, it was special because of the problem we all face now.
Yeah.
But otherwise, honestly, it's not that exciting to see Olympia or Arnold Classic today.
Yeah.
For me, it's not as exciting. I like it the way it was before. We could have evolved and have, instead to have a few, Sean Ray, Lina Brada, and Francis Benfato, we could have had a bunch of them.
A lot of them, right, yeah, right.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that's why there's so many people out there that love the look of the 80s and the 90s, and I think that's what I try to do with this podcast, is I try to talk about those days and relive those days, and because I think a lot of people feel like you do, that it just went too big. And now, when we've lost the posing, we've lost the definition, we lost the quality.
We know for sure that the results of the level of the competition today is steroid.
Yeah.
It's chemicals.
Yes.
We know that. Yes. Definitely.
Definitely.
The pool is definitely. So we know that. So most of the trainees that want to become competitor, they don't want to take risks. They don't want to take chances.
Right.
Because you want or not, if you take more drugs, you have more chance to be ill one day. Not today, but tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because right. We must think one day they also will be 62 like me.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if they will be as in shape as I am today.
Right.
As healthy, I don't know about that.
Right.
But all I know is one day you will be 62.
Yeah.
So I think... definitely, there is a lot of bodybuilders that want to compete at this level, but they know if they want to compete at this level, first they have to have the genetic, we must be honest.
Right.
They also have to have the drive, the passion for a long time in order to get into this level.
Right.
But they definitely need the fundamental element that is story.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask you about your comeback, because you stopped competing in 1993, but then you came back in 2006. So what was the reason why you wanted to come back?
At that time, I had my own range of supplements. Okay. And so I really wanted to get some publicity, and I wanted people to know that I'm still training, I'm still doing guest appearance in order to promote my brand. At the FIBO, for example, at different expo in South Africa. I was living in South Africa.
Okay.
And I missed competition.
Yeah.
And I knew that I could get in shape because I was doing guest posing almost every year, many times a year.
Mm-hmm.
I was still training. I never quit training. So I said, okay, I want to do Ironman. And then I couldn't get my visa on time.
Mm.
And so I decided to do, okay, I can do Ironman. I'm going to push my preparation furthermore, and I'm going to do the Australian Grand Prix. It's a great classic. There is great physique who go there. The best of America, they go there also to try to have this title to their repertoire. So I'm going to prepare for that. And I was 48 years of age, and I decided to go for a whole year, only focusing on gaining more size, in order to match the competition of the 2000.
Yeah.
And so I did. And I think it's the length of time I prepare that make a distinction. Remember, before I was preparing Olympia, only 3 months before.
Mm-hmm. So this
90 days only.
Yeah.
Olympia, 90 days. The off-season, I was clean.
Right.
And I started preparing with chemicals, Mr. Olympia, only 90 days before.
Wow, okay. I've heard that a lot. Yeah. I've heard a lot of people back in the 80s and 90s, they did that. They stay clean all year.
It was the way we did.
Right. So now this one in Australia, you said you trained all year for that. So you were eating more and doing everything you needed to do in order to get ready for that one show.
I learned a lot from, all the contest preparation I did as an amateur and a professional. So I only trained one time for your day. Instead to do split routine,
right,
and to train one time in the morning, one time afternoon. So I was training only one time, only in the morning.
Okay.
And then after I was just relaxing and posing and doing a little bit of walk and that's it.
Right.
And I ate a lot because I wanted to make a distinction in terms of size. And so I can 6-7 kilograms, 15 pounds heavier than I was at my best at Olympia.
Wow. Okay.
So it's quite a big improvement.
Yeah.
Because of the training, because of the dieting, the supplementation and all. So I make a really big distinction between my Olympia preparation and the Australian Grand Prix preparation.
Yeah.
At the time and all. And I knew a lot also. I knew a lot about training, nutrition, about everything.
Yeah.
So that's why I could prepare. The only handicap I had is I tore my chest in 93.
Oh, 93. Wow, that was a while ago. Okay.
And that's why I retired from competition.
Oh, okay.
Not to mention that I was also a little bit disappointed about the pricing and all.
Yeah.
But because I tore my chest, I had a major handicap. So I was preparing with a torn chest and I'm 48 years of age.
Yeah, yeah.
So two.
Yeah.
As a handicap. And I'm quite pleased with the results at the end.
Yeah, I remember the pictures of that, Francis. You looked really, really good. You were really bigger, but you still had the aesthetics and you still had your shape.
Yes, I mean, especially the conditioning. I was the most conditioned again.
Wow.
I think on stage, I was much more conditioned than the top five, ahead of me. But it was my chest who made me to play six. Otherwise, I would have been top three, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Because you know your handicap. I mean, you see the chest when you do lat spread, when you do double biceps.
Yeah,
and all.
Yeah. Did you ever think about getting that fixed, or was it too late?
At that time, yes, in 93, I wanted to get fixed and to do like Kevin Nealon and to go to Washington, D.C. to get an operate. But here and there, I needed support, to be honest. Just moving from France, taking the plane with ice and getting into operation.
Yeah.
You need someone to take you by the hand and say, okay, Francis, come with me, and we're going to.
Right.
Believe or not, at that point, you know, if you want to hurt a bodybuilder very badly, there is nothing more dramatic that a bodybuilder will lose the shape and the size of one specific muscle.
Yeah.
I had a great chest.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, when I did the last spread, my chest was wrong, and I didn't have one side of my chest. I mean, completely torn.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, it was proportion, it was symmetry, it was aesthetic. Now you don't have the chest.
Yeah.
So that was major handicap. So mentally, I was depressed.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have the mental strength to go myself to Washington to get an appointment, to get fixed, and to come back. If I had someone with me who really was strong, because I needed a strong person with me,
yeah,
and bring me there, yes, I could have done.
Yeah.
I could have done. But the doctor, I had the doctor on the phone, and he said, you have to come now.
Yeah.
Off ice, and you have to come now. We have to get you operated now. Mm. And I didn't.
Wow.
But it's too late. It's too
late now. Yeah. And I imagine too procedure back then probably wasn't as good as it is today. I'm sure. You know, that was a long time ago.
Yes, for sure, sure. But Kevin did a successful operation.
Yeah, he had 94, 93, 94. Yeah.
Yeah, also at some time. So no, I think I could have fixed, but
yeah, yeah. So. How did you feel then about that comeback? Were you happy with that?
Yes. No, overall, I was happy, honestly. Very, very happy with, especially my preparation. You know what I enjoyed the most about bodybuilding competition was the traveling when I was preparing from peak to peak. And it was the long time preparing to get in better and better shape and to see your body changing in terms of size and quality. Mm-hmm. And that's why I enjoy most.
Yeah.
The rest is up to the judge, it's up to the conditions. Remember when you compete at Australia and you live in South Africa, you have to travel for 24 hours. You have 24 hours time zone.
Yeah.
So it's really 12 hours time zone. So it's really difficult to handle the situation and the difficulty. And so it was difficult. It was difficult, but I really enjoy. I really enjoy the preparation, especially the shape I got into. I was mind blowing away, especially when I was at home in South Africa in Cape Town. When I look at the mirror and I saw my physique after a workout, I say, "Wow, I mean, unbelievable what I could achieve at 48 years of age."
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. I really didn't know that. But I had to add a goal, an objective. And my objective was to do Ironman first. I would have preferred, to be honest, because I always liked to compete in America.
Yeah.
And so I did the Australian Grand Prix. And so that was my goal, my objective. And I prepared for. And I was happy to prepare and to get in better and better shape. You know, when you're a bodybuilder, I'm a passionate bodybuilder. Bodybuilding is my vocation.
Mm-hmm.
So there is nothing else to give me as much joy as training, eating, and preparing for a show. Even today I don't, because I can't. Because of my age now and because I don't have competition. Of course, if someone invites me and say, "Francis, you do a guest pose at Mr. Olympia, and we are going to make sure that this guest pose get publicized." I don't know. You need to have a motivation.
Right. You need to have a goal.
I will probably do.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Yeah.
I will. But you need to, or maybe I challenge Lila Brada, Sean Ray.
Yeah.
And other competitors my age and say, "Okay, we all step at Mr. Olympia stage and we do a pose down."
Yeah.
And then after we do an exhibition.
Yeah, right. That'd be cool.
something. Right. But otherwise you just don't come back. But again, to come back to what I say, that's what I enjoy the most.
Mm-hmm.
Training and having a bodybuilding lifestyle. And the rest, of course, well, I do what I have to do because I have a supplement line. I also have my own training methodology. We were recognized as a method now. We are recognized as a method in UK. So I can provide certification courses to personal trainers, to coaches, and I want to do so as soon as possible. In 2020, I think I will start doing that.
Uh-huh.
So my method is the PPM, Progressive Performance Method, based on all I have learned about training. And so, this is something I'm very involved with. I'm also an online coach. I do online coaching.
Right.
With normal people, mostly normal people.
Yeah.
But even bodybuilders, if they're happy to train with my method, I think they can get great positive results and good response. Very good. So, yes, that's what I do. I have my supplement brand again, and I have my method, and I do online coaching.
Okay.
So I enjoy that, but what I enjoy the most is training.
Yeah. If you look back over your whole career, Francis, what was like the one or two highlights of your competitive career?
I would say 1987.
87. Okay. When you did
but you can
university.
See, if you see the posing, you understand.
Yeah, okay.
The posing was really good. 1990 also.
Yeah, the deal
was really 1990 good. Was overwhelming and disappointing, as I said. Overwhelming because it was Mr. Olympia, but disappointing, well, we know why, because I was in great condition shape. I think I was, honestly, the most conditioned athlete backstage and on stage.
Yeah.
But I love it because I got into one of my best condition shape.
Yeah.
I also like the European Tour in 1989. I got some great shape there, great condition shape.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I had a good time also there.
Yeah.
And 1985, you mentioned it, Mr. Universe, 1985 was good also. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So that was the highlight. 1985, 1987, Mr. Olympia, 1990. 91 was great, also was good.
Yeah.
The Australian Grand Prix was good, but you see, when you compete with a handicap like that, it's almost if you go naked on stage.
You
feel something is wrong, you know.
Yeah.
And you can see I was trying to hide. But I was nervous and my face was tense. You're not at ease. You're not at ease. But it was the way it was. It's challenging. It was an handicap, but I did it.
Yeah. And you beat a lot of guys on that show, too.
Yes. And I could have. I could have done better, that's the thing.
Yeah. All right, Francis. Well, thank you for joining us for this interview. It was great talking to you. I never got a chance to meet you before. And like I said, I think you're still recognized even today. And 2020 is one of the greatest physiques ever, you know, with that aesthetics that you had and the symmetry. So it was a real pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise, honestly, I really enjoy talking to you. And, you know, it's all your questions that drove my speech and my answer, and so it was inspiring for me to go through all my career in a short time. And I hope that the people will enjoy also.
Oh yeah, I think they will. All right, Francis. Well, it's great meeting you, and all the best to you out there in France. And I wish you the best with your supplement line, and stay safe during these challenging times, right?
Thank you very much, and likewise for you. And again, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Francis. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Francis Benfato for joining us from France for that interview. We've been waiting for that. All right. Without further ado, I want to read this article from the February of 1986 issue of Muscle and Fitness magazine. It was written by Bill Reynolds. And it is the Mr. Olympia report from 1985. This was Lee Haney's second Mr. Olympia. It says, "What a Mr. Olympia and what a winner. The 21st edition of Joe Weider's prestigious Mr. Olympia competition held October 26th in Brussels, Belgium, was undoubtedly the most exciting and fiercely competitive of the 10 successive Olympias I've personally witnessed since 1976. As expected, the winner was massive Lee Haney, but the war for the next 9 to 10 places was both spirited and intense. Ultimately, the top 10 finishers were first Lee Haney, second Albert Beckles, third Richard Gaspari, fourth Mohammed McAway, fifth Mike Christian, sixth Barry DeMay, seventh Tom Platz, eighth Sergio Oliva, ninth Bob Paris, and 10th Frank Richard. Lee banked $50,000 in prize money, Beckles $20,000, McAway, $6,000, Christian, $4,000, and DeMay, $3,000. Seems like he forgot Gaspari there. In the 21 years since the Master Blaster brewed up his Mr. Olympia extravaganza, only 8 men have held the title. Larry Scott was the first Mr. Olympia in 1965, and he repeated his victory in 1966. The great Scott was succeeded by Sergio Oliva from 1967 through 69, Arnold Schwarzenegger, 1970 through 75, and also 1980. Franco Colombo, 1976 and 1981. Frank Zane, 1977 through 79. Chris Dickerson, 1982. Samir Banute, 1983. And Lee Haney, 1984 and 1985. Of these 8 worthy champions, Haney has proven himself to be one of the greatest by becoming the first superstar since Zane to win titles in consecutive years. 27 bodybuilders were originally scheduled to compete in the 1985 Mr. Olympia, but after Joseph Wilkosch, Bertel Fox, and Dale Ruplinger failed to show, the field was reduced to 24. Still, this was the largest number of contestants in memory, no doubt because the show was devoid of its normally stringent entry requirements. It was literally open to anyone who had won a world title, and a couple who hadn't, rather than being limited to the previous year's top 10, plus the top 3 Grand Prix athletes and the 4 amateur world champions. Wilkosch would have been in the contest had he not misgauged the time he'd have to spend in his new gym he opened in Stuttgart, West Germany, 4 months prior to the show. Josep and his wife Ruth have literally been working 16 to 18 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week, to ensure the success of their new enterprise. As a result, he could neither eat nor train correctly, and he was more than 20 pounds under his normal competitive weight 2 weeks before the show, when he telephoned his resignation from the entry list. I talked to Joseph 2 weeks after the Mr. Olympia, and he mentioned that he actually planned to be in the audience at the show right up to the day before the event. But under the circumstances, it would have been difficult to merely sit in the audience. Still, you can rest assured that I will soon be back in heavy training in an effort to win the 1986 Mr. Olympia title. It'll be in Columbus, the site of my pro Mr. Universe win, so count on it. This was the second straight Big O that Fox had bagged out of since his fine showing in Munich in 1983. His failure to attend in 1984 was due to a serious back injury, while his absence in 1985 was ascribed to personal problems. Foxy is alleged to have binged out on junk food only a week prior to the contest, but I was unable to confirm or quash this rumor. No reason was given for Ruplinger's failure to attend. However, he now has his own gym in Iowa, and the pressures of running such a business can eat away much of a bodybuilder's training time and his resolve to maintain a low-calorie diet. Frank Zane, one of the most venerable athletes in the history of the Mr. Olympia show, had not officially retired, but had been training for the competition. However, the streak of bad luck that followed Zane for the past 6 years again kept the bodybuilding world from seeing his amazing physique one more time. This time, his luck literally hounded him when Frank and his wife Christine were attacked by a Doberman while running near their Palm Springs health resort just a few weeks before the contest. In defending his wife, Frank incurred a serious bite on his upper left arm, from which fang marks will still vividly show during the week prior to the gathering of champions in Brussels. More than 5,000 spectators packed the Forest National Theater, while millions more saw the contest in Europe and the United States via pay and public television. Fans in America watched the show via a live cable conceived by IFBB President Ben Weider, and he managed in Brussels by Weider Communications head Andy Olson. Commentators on the pay TV network were Ricky Wayne and Jeff Everson of Flex and Muscle and Fitness, respectively. Athletes, supporters, and press were lodged at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Brussels, the same official hotel as used for the recent IFBB Amateur World Championships, and food was semi-speedily served in the hotel's quaint restaurant, Hugo's. Principally responsible for the success of the Mr. Olympia extravaganza was organizer Julian Blumhardt, who was also the IFBB's vice president for Europe. Julian has been promoting high-level shows in Belgium since 1951, totaling just under 200 separate promotions in 34 years. Included in his 17 international shows are the 1979 European Championships, the 1982 Men's Amateur World Championships, and the 1985 Women's Amateur World Championships. Julian has promoted so many competitions that he's now able to run the entire operation by himself, with assistance only during the final hectic 2 weeks. He admits to farming out poster designs and a few other specialized tasks, but Julian alone steered the Mr. Olympia show from its sanctioning in 1982 right through the completion of the promotion 3 years later. Unfortunately, Julian merely broke even financially on the venture, because a strong dollar eroded the value of the Belgium franc. This in turn made the $100,000 prize cost Blumhardt nearly twice as much in Belgium currency in 1985 as it would have in 1982. Even the generous sponsorship of ACB Gym, Physical World Gym, Davina Products, Weider Health and Fitness, and IFBB International only brought Blumhardt up to the high tide mark financially. I never intended to make money on the Mr. Olympia, Julian Blumhardt asserted. I undertook the promotion of the show to elevate the normally low interest in bodybuilding across Europe. I'm concerned first about the welfare of the sport, second about the ascendancy of the IFBB, and only third about making money. The sport of bodybuilding always comes first. Chief beneficiary of Julian Blumhardt's largesse was Lee Haney, who banked $50,000 in first prize money for a second straight year. And I simply can't say enough good things about Lee's superb physical condition and tremendous fighting spirit. Haney displayed absolutely every quality of a superstar bodybuilder, and he and his wife Shirley were justifiably proud of his accomplishments as they embraced on stage with the final curtain falling on one of history's greatest Mr. Olympia shows. It's funny, Lee said at the post-show banquet, but I really didn't know how much the Mr. Olympia title meant to me until I was actually in Brussels to compete. Then it dawned on me that I was a very fortunate athlete, because winning the Mr. Olympia for the first time meant that I was the best in the sport. That realization kindled a fierce desire to win the title again. Until that moment, I hadn't been totally psyched up to defend my title. After, I was ready. It was much tougher to win this year because there's automatically more pressure on the man holding a Mr. Olympia title than on the man attempting to wrest the title from the top guy's grasp. I felt that unique pressure all year, which drove me through 3 workouts every 4 days without missing a session in a full year. It also helped me to maintain my food intake at an average of 3,700 calories per day for an entire year. But it didn't give me the competitiveness I gained in the Hyatt Regency 2 days before the Mr. Olympia. That skull session gave me the edge I needed to become Mr. Olympia a second straight year. As you can vividly see from the photos accompanying this report, the 1985 model, Lee Haney, was significantly improved over 1984. At 5'11" and 242 pounds, Lee topped the Toledos a pound lighter than a year before, but his calves, arms, shoulders, and other critical areas were thicker. At the same time, Lee's hips, glutes, and midsection had become more streamlined than in the past. He had a fairly good abs when he won the first Sandow statuette, but this year's, Lee's intercostals, rectus, abdominals, and obliques were sharply delineated as those on most lightweights. The quality that set Haney apart from a phenomenally well-conditioned Albert Beckles was undoubtedly his gracefully balanced symmetry. Both athletes have few, if any, proportional weak points, but Lee's muscles are long and full, with all the peaks in the right places. As terrific as Albert's physique has become, his body symmetry is no match for that of Lee Haney. The current Mr. Olympia is also 4 to 5 inches taller than his nearest rival in the show that has now become an almost exclusive province of the big man. Although Lee still isn't the best poser in the pro ranks, as usual that honor goes to Muhammad McAway, his posing routine this year was a big improvement on anything he's ever done before. He even had a snappy tempo change halfway through the routine when he smoothly switched from a slow, balletic posing to a faster, jazzier program. I'm convinced that the improvement in my posing came about because I was on stage far more often giving exhibitions this past year, Mr. Olympia observed. I've been able to try out new poses and transitions in front of a live audience during the past year, and nothing could have had more significant impact on my posing. It was very easy to tell by the audience response whether or not a new component in my routine was working or not. If I got a positive response, I'd leave the new component in my routine. If no one applauded, it was immediately dropped from my posing program. My secret to success is working hard on every facet of bodybuilding. The attention to detail has paid off handsomely. I see no reason why I won't be able to reach my goal of winning Mr. Olympia 5 more times. After all, I'm only 25, and there's plenty of room for more improvement. After Lee Haney won the 84 Mr. Olympia, many fans asked me how good he was. I always replied, "The only guy who will beat Lee in the next 5 years is Lee." I stick by that prediction. I don't feel that he will lose unless he chooses not to compete or he fails to maintain his current motivation to excel. Even Arnold at his best would have had trouble defeating Haney. Lee has penned an excellent article on how he won his second Mr. Olympia title. This exclusive feature will be published in a forthcoming issue of Muscle and Fitness magazine. 9 judges arbitrated at the Olympia with 2 highs and 2 low scores eliminated. This contrasts with a normal 7 judges, the 1 high and 1 low score being dropped. The excellent judging panel consisted of head judge Jacques Bloemhart from Belgium, along with Winston Roberts from Canada, Jim Mannion from the USA, Robert Binnenfeld from West Germany, Dominic Serto from the USA, Walter van de Breden from Holland, Michael Heckel from Switzerland, Ron Davies from England, and Rafael Santoya from Spain. Albert Beckles probably wished Haney had stayed home because Big Al would have won many a Mr. O with the superb physique he had forged this year at the unbelievably advanced age of 54. But with Lee in the picture, venerable Albert was forced into second place, 2 positions higher than he ever managed before. And you just know that he'll be in the thick of things again next year. Beckles turned to bodybuilding during the mid-1960s when he was already past 30. Before that, he had been a successful weightlifter in England, so Albert already had his share of highly developed skeletal muscles. After only a few months of bodybuilding training, his photos created a minor sensation when first published in Britain and later in America. In 1968, Albert won his first major title, Mr. Britain. He quickly added to his trophy collection by winning the Mr. Europe and IFBB Mr. Universe titles. But during the mid-70s, Beckles fell on hard times. Work as an accountant for the British War Ministry took the starch out of his workouts and moderated the stringent diet that he followed for a decade. I saw him, out of shape, compete in 3 Mr. Olympias and a Pro Mr. Universe show during the late 1970s, and his condition actually regressed each show. The turning point for Beckles came in 1980 as he neared his 50th birthday. I came to the point where I knew I was finished if I didn't rededicate myself to maintaining a faultless bodybuilding lifestyle, he recalls. It was time to put up or shut up. I was also on the verge of retirement from government service, and I was still feeling like I was 25, so I went for it. Since then, Albert has steadily improved his physique, winning a raft of IFBB Pro titles in the process, and he has progressively improved his placing in the Mr. Olympia until he reached second spot in the latest competition. As he came off stage, Beckles made it clear that he wouldn't be resting on his laurels. I'm not at all bitter about placing second. The better man won, and I'm now looking forward to 1986. I fought hard last year, I fought hard this year, and I'll fight hard next year. The first two full rounds of compulsory pose comparisons from the nine judges told the story of who would be in the top 10. Haney was called out for only 3 times in 18 tries, but he was almost as clearly superior this year as it had been in 1984, when he hardly been called out for a comparison at all. When there is an obvious winner, and perhaps even obvious second and third place athletes, the top man or men aren't compared that often. The nitpicking occurs when judges attempt to establish lower placings. At 22, Richard Gaspari became the youngest bodybuilder ever to place in the top three at a Mr. Olympia competition. And with his superb physique and brimming self-confidence, Rich deserved his high placing. Some bodybuilding cognoscenti felt that he should have been in first place rather than third. Gaspari has been on a real roll. Last year, he was only 21, but he easily won the MPC Light Heavyweight National Championships at 192 pounds, and he squeaked by Joseph Gromulus to win the IFBB Light Heavyweight World Championships at 188 pounds. In mid-1985, he placed second to Beckles at the Night of the Champion show, weighing a super rip 208. He'd further increase his weight to 215, he's 5'8½, for the Mr. O without losing the smallest cut. He's now virtually as massive and ripped as Franco Colombo was at his peak. Will there be no end to Richard Gaspari's improvements? During the summer of 84, Gaspari camped out on Lee and Shirley Haney's couch for 3 months, and he trained with Lee at Gold's Rosita and other Southern California gyms. The partnership paid off. Lee won his first Mr. Olympia, and Richard won his national and world championships. Now Lee's in Atlanta and Richard's back home in Jersey, and I don't think that Big Lee doesn't hear his old training partner's footsteps. It felt totally unbelievable to place third in my first Olympia, Richard exulted right after the show. Lee also placed third in his first O, but I'm 2 years younger than he was when he did it. Look out, Lee. Next year is mine. Down 2 spots from his second place finish in 1983 and 84 was an unlucky Muhammad McAway. He had unsuccessfully tried to come in heavier than the past 2 years, paying a price for looking somewhat less muscular than in the past. But there's no question that Muhammad has the stuff to rebound, which would make Mr. O a veritable street fight next year. McAway is a citizen of Canada, and he's worked for the past 4 years for super fitness gyms in Toronto. His mass-building plans this year had 3 separate stages, a weightlifting-style program using high sets and very low reps on basic bodybuilding movements, a more normal off-season cycle, and a 2-month peaking phase. Muhammad came up a little short of peak condition, and as a result, he suffered a little in the compulsory poses round of judging. But then he improved his position with his usual spectacular free-posing routine before settling into 4th place. I've never seen such grace and power in the routine of a top bodybuilder. If you ever get a chance to see this outstanding professional, either competing or guest-posing in your area, be sure not to squander the opportunity. Muhammad McAway personifies the sport and the art of bodybuilding like no other pro. Even though his 5th place finish was lower than he originally hoped for, Mike Christian was ultimately overjoyed to place as high as he did. No one will ever know the hell I went through on stage at the Mr. Olympia, Mike noted, so I'm completely satisfied with my placing. About 4 hours before the show, I began cramping up so badly that I was almost sure I would die. Due to the cramps, I couldn't pump up, and I simply couldn't flex my muscles hard on stage. I looked smaller than I would have under normal circumstances, and I didn't have my usual striations, so you can understand why I'm the happiest man in the world right now. Christian later conceded that he made a rookie mistake, taking in too little fluid and eliminating too much, one which he regularly cautions less experienced bodybuilders to avoid during his seminars. He hadn't made the common mistake of taking a heavy diuretic, but he'd taken 2 saunas within 24 hours of the show without consuming any fluids. With too little water in his body, Mike's electrolyte balance moved out of equilibrium and he began to suffer massive cramps. Christian's training partner, Louis Freitas, gave him large amounts of fluid and supplementary electrolytes, but the cramps were out of control, and Mike's hope of a high placing in the Olympia were dashed on the rocks of an elementary error. It was a shame to witness Massive Mike's downfall, because in all other areas of competitive bodybuilding, he was far better prepared than in past years. Had there been an only once every 4 years World Games, Barry DeMay would have been winning the IFBB World Heavyweight Championship a week after the Mr. Olympia. The eventual heavyweight winner, Peter Hensel, wouldn't have stood a chance, rather than placing in the top six at his first Mr. Olympia show. But there was a World Games last July at which Barry murdered Matt Mendenhall to qualify for the Mr. O. Make no mistake about it, DeMay already had a great physique, but he's barely scratched the surface of his potential. At 23, he feels he's reached only about 60% of the massive potential he first displayed in 1981 when he won the European Heavyweight Championship at only 19 years of age. Each time DeMay was called out for a comparison, every Dutchman in the auditorium took up the chant, "Barry, Barry, Barry," and DeMay responded beautifully to the audience's lofty expectations. Every time out, he looked more and more confident, displaying a very complete physique, right down to well-developed calves, hamstrings, glutes, and erectors, areas that even many of the best have failed to build up, with excellent command of every pose. Backstage, Barry was as happy as a pig in a mud hole. As he explained, "It feels wonderful to finally be competing with the best in the world in a truly sportsmanlike atmosphere. There's so much pressure in amateur competitions and so little good comradeship. I'll definitely be back for more. Erica Mess and I enter the World Mixed Pairs event next spring. Then I'll hit the Night of the Champions as a tune-up for the next Mr. Olympia. I'm so excited I can hardly wait." Only the top man, Lee Haney, received the coveted bronze statuette of Sandow and emblematic of the Mr. Olympia title. Only the top three took home massive gold, silver, and bronze Joe Weider medals, and only the top six men were in the pose down. All but the top 15 athletes were eliminated after the prejudging. These 15 were allowed a mere 30 seconds of free posing at the evening show. But every competitor, as well as every judge and official, received special commemorative medals, courtesy of Julian Blumhardt and his organizing committee. Just out of the pose down group was Tom Platz in seventh place. Eager to lay 1981 to rest, Tom was in his lifetime best shape, so it was undoubtedly a bitter pill to swallow when the final six competitors were called out for the pose down. However, Mr. Legs is always the consummate sportsman and reserved any expressions of disappointment for more private moments with his wife, Cheryl. "To start with," Tom told me backstage, "I train legs only once every 2 weeks, and I did absolutely no squatting this year. My legs didn't seem to suffer at all, and I had even more energy to devote to bombing my upper body. The net result was a gratifying improvement in my overall physique." Tom did a hair-raising side ab shot to punctuate his statement. "I trained the last 2 weeks in Munich, West Germany with Lee Haney, and we had some terrific workouts together. Ralph Newman, who owns the gym where we trained, was very helpful to me, particularly when I was depleting my body of stored carbohydrates prior to carb loading." Sergio Oliva, one of the most venerated names in the history of bodybuilding, was entering his eighth Mr. Olympia. "In my judgment, Sergio was greatly improved over his 84 condition. His legs were very weak last year, but this time they were almost up to previous mythical standards. And the Oliva thighs had cuts in them, particularly along the sides, that I don't remember seeing in any of his many competitive appearances. I've seen, dating back to Sergio, his junior Mr. America win over training partner Bob Guida in 1966 in San Jose, California." The 1984 edition of Sergio Oliva appeared drawn and overtrained, while this year he combined cuts and muscle density with most of the mass he displayed at his best. Part of Oliva's downfall was on-stage deflation, brought about by nearly 2 hours of pumping up, followed by a couple more hours of standing virtually immobile on stage for comparisons of compulsory poses. Bob Paris finished ninth, down three spots from 84. Throughout his 12 weeks of contest prep, Bob had maintained a body weight of 230 to 235 pounds while reducing his body fat's content from 8.8 to 3.2. A 3.2% reading is ripped for anyone as big as Paris, but still he appeared on stage with the slightly blurred cuts. Perhaps he had a minor water retention problem, which, when corrected, will catapult him up in that Olympia ranks. Very few bodybuilders have ever combined Bob's degree of muscle mass with such an aesthetic structure. Frank Richard continued his remarkable comeback, launched at 39 years of age after more than 10 years away from the sport. Frank would certainly have preferred to keep training and competing, but he was very seriously injured in a 25-foot fall while wiring a commercial building. He suffered more than 40 broken bones, which ultimately required 14 operations to restore full use of his skeletal muscles, which in turn allowed him to begin training again 18 months prior to the O. Frank was in better shape than at the Night of the Champions, and he was very happy with his 10th place finish, which qualified him automatically for the 1986 Mr. Olympia. I personally wouldn't be surprised to see Frank in the top six at the next Mr. Olympia show. He has the potential. Bob Birdsong finished in 11th place, down a bit in muscle mass from the fabulous condition he achieved for the World Grand Prix Finals last winter in Montreal. But Bob was still very in muscular shape and fully deserved his placing. Bob has been taking posing tutorship from Tina Plackinger's husband, Bob, and his routine was much better than I've noted in the past. Bob used to be very mechanical in his movements between poses, while now he moves with the fluid grace of a professional dancer. 12th place went to Michael Jackson lookalike Tony Pearson, who was in the best shape I've seen him achieve. Tony had been training in Germany for 6 weeks prior to the Olympia, and he suffered none of the time zone problems that overcame a few competitors who flew directly from the States. I seldom observed sharper abdominal muscularity than Tony had on stage in Brussels. His rectus abdominis, his intercostals, and his obliques looked as though they had been carved with a straight razor from the hardest teak wood. Tony should be proud of his achievements this year, which included a fourth straight World Mixed Pairs Championship. Wilf Sylvester made the short trip from England to Belgium for the show, and he was in great shape. I think his diminutive stature forced him into a lower placing than he actually deserved. Wilfred is unique in the sport, having won the IFBB World Championships 9 years apart, in 1975 in South Africa, and then again in 1984 in Las Vegas. His goal was to be competitive with Danny Padilla and Mohamed McAway, two other notable short bodybuilders. He blitzed Danny, but he lagged far behind Mohamed. Big Bad John Brown enthralled the audience with nearly 10 minutes of sensational posing, including some flashy breakdance moves, but he only managed a 14th place vote from the judges. If the audience had their say in the placings, he and DeMay would have been fighting it out with Haney for first place. John's come a long way from the skinny-as-a-rail appearance he made in the 1976 Junior Mr. Los Angeles competition. Then his flash move was bouncing his paper-thin pecs a couple of times. He's put on about 75 pounds of muscle since then, and he's won a Mr. Universe title in the process, making himself a force to be reckoned with at future IFBB Pro shows. Jacques Nouville, the former World Light Heavyweight Champion from France, took the last finalist position in 15th. He was a lot bigger than the last couple of Mr. Olympias, and he had retained his sharp, usual muscularity. Still, his calves and forearms lagged behind the rest of his physique, spoiling an otherwise superior body. Nouville had trained for most of the summer at Gold's and World's Gym in Venice and Santa Monica. While it was difficult to recognize a physique that climbed on a Europe-bound plane as the same one that had climbed off the Air France jet at LAX a short 3 months before, there's something very positive about training in Southern California. The 1986 Mr. Olympia competition will be promoted at the Veterans Memorial Auditorium in Columbus, Ohio, site of the 5 previous Mr. Olympia shows. The familiar team of Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Lorimer will be promoting the show in Columbus, as they have done ably for the past years. If you haven't been to a Mr. Olympia competition in Columbus, you wouldn't believe the noise a crowd of 4,000 rabid fans can make in that place. It's an experience that is impossible to forget, and I'm looking forward to seeing another Mr. Olympia at the Vet. It's highly possible that Sweden will host the 1987 Mr. Olympia extravaganza based on the utterly great IFBB Men's World Championships they hosted a week after the Olympia in Göteborg. Counting a prejudging on Saturday and the finals on Sunday, the Swedes attracted a massive 7,000 excited fans to see 4 weight classes and more than 140 athletes tangle for the coveted IFBB World Championships that qualify one for the Mr. Olympia. One of the factors that should swing the 87 Olympia to Sweden is the unbelievably great hospitality and organization presented by the promoters of the World Championships. In the last 8 years, I've probably seen close to 100 big shows, and none of them could compare to the well-oiled smoothness of the Swedish organizing committee. They mean it when they say Volkomen. Turning back to the Belgium Olympia, it was definitely the greatest one I've seen. It was probably the best in the history of the event. Maybe the old Larry Scott Harold Poole confrontations at the Brooklyn Academy of Music were exciting, but they certainly were no match for a Mr. Olympia show featuring 24 entrants, 8 to 10 of whom would have won the title a few years back. And no other Mr. Olympia has ever had the same head-to-toe, all-out competition for each of the top 12 places. Julian Blumhardt and his organizing committee should be congratulated and thanked for giving the bodybuilding world such an outstanding show, one that future promoters can shoot to equal. It was a great show, and Lee Haney is a great Mr. Olympia. All right. Great article by Bill Reynolds. Rest in peace, Bill Reynolds. He was a great writer for Muscle and Fitness magazine. That is it for the show. Thanks again to Francis Benfato for the interview, and thanks to Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We will see you guys next week. Everybody be safe out there. Take care.